Okay, so, the world throws so much information at us every single day,
It
right?
really does.
You're busy and it's easy to feel overwhelmed, right? Like you're browning in it. What we're trying to do here is cut through the noise, pick one thing, maybe something that seems a little, well, technical at first glance.
And it eats, as they say.
Exactly. And then pull out the truly important stuff, give you those insights, the nuggets that really help you understand how things work without getting lost in all the jargon.
Sounds like a plan.
So today we're going back to basics, and I mean really fundamental stuff here, how public money is handled. Are you ready for a deep dive?
Always lay it on me.
All right, today we're looking at reports from the Oklahoma State Auditor and Inspector, specifically focusing on the Pottawatomie County Court Clerk. We're covering the fiscal years ending in June of 2006, 2007, 2008, and 2009.
Ah, government accountability. Love it.
Me too. Now think of these reports like a public checkup.
A financial physical, so to speak.
Exactly, for how taxpayer money is being managed.
Which is something everyone should care about, right? After all, it's our money.
Absolutely. And that's where this deep dive gets interesting. It gives you a chance to peek behind the curtain and see the inner workings of a specific public office, the court clerk's office, over several years.
And we're not just skimming the surface here. Our mission is to extract the key learning points from these documents, zeroing in on the money flowing through the court clerk's office, specifically the court fund and the court clerk revolving fund.
We'll see what the auditors found, both the good and the, well, maybe not so good.
The areas for improvement, as they often say.
Right, areas for improvement. To make sense of all of this, it helps to understand what the Pottawatomie County Court Clerk actually does.
What their role is.
Right, so according to these reports, they're responsible for recording court proceedings, collecting fees, issuing documents, keeping all those financial records straight, and dispersing funds. It's a lot.
It's a pretty central role in the local justice system. A lot of moving parts.
It really is. Okay, so let's get into it. First, what were some of the overall positive things that the state auditor consistently found across all 4 years?
Well, across the board, a really important positive finding was that the court clerk's office was, with respect to the items tested, collecting the correct fees and properly accounting for them. That means they were keeping good records of where the money was coming from and where it was going.
Okay, that's reassuring, right? The money coming in was being handled correctly.
It seems so.
So what about the money going out? What about the court fund?
So for the court fund, the auditors consistently found that the vouchers, you can think of these like receipts for payments, were generally properly supported, meaning there was paperwork backing up why the money was spent, they were properly approved, categorized correctly, and they didn't exceed the budget.
So checks and balances were in place?
Yes, for the most part.
Okay, good. What about the district court vouchers? Did the auditors find anything interesting there?
Yeah, they found that the district court vouchers were all properly accounted for. And they were issued according to the court's instructions, which is important.
Right, checks and balances again.
Yep. And here's a big one. All of the fund activity for both the court fund and the court clerk revolving fund reconciled with the records held by the county treasurer.
So basically, their books matched.
Exactly.
Okay, so far so good.
Yeah, it paints a picture of generally sound financial procedures, at least in the areas they examined.
That's good to know, but let's dig a little deeper, year by year.
Let's get granular.
Exactly. Let's start with the court fund's performance in fiscal year 2006. What was happening then?
All right, so in 2006, the total amount collected by the court fund was $1,114,620. A big chunk of that, $1,107,434 to be exact, came from court fines, fees, and forfeitures.
Makes sense, right? That's where you'd expect most of the money to come from.
Yeah. There was also $5,980 in interest earned, and a smaller amount, about $1,206, from canceled checks or vouchers.
Okay, so over $1 million came in. Where did all that money go?
Well, the total spent from the court fund that year was $1,093,777.
Wow.
This was broken down into different categories. Some went to lump sum budget categories, totaling $279,863.
What kind of things were included in that category?
It included things like juror expenses, the cost of having citizens participate in trials. It was $26,542. Then there was a significant amount for trial court attorneys, $143,324.
That makes sense.
Right. And $4,300 for mental health attorneys. And fees for guardian ad litem.
Guardian ad litem, what are those?
Those are the attorneys appointed to represent the best interest of children involved in court cases. Those fees were $13,664.
Okay, so a lot of money going towards legal representation.
Exactly. There was also $17,683 for transcripts of preliminary hearings and trials, and a smaller amount, $616, for appeal transcripts.
So those are all costs directly tied to the court system itself.
Yeah, pretty much. Then you have things like general office supplies, $19,808. Printing court forms, that was $8,929. and then $16,619 for postage and shipping.
Postage. So snail mail was still a big thing then, huh?
Yeah, it seems so. And utilities for the court facilities, things like gas, water, and electricity, came out to $16,996.
Okay, so all the necessary cost of running a court.
Right, and there were smaller amounts for things like record books and court reporter supplies, too.
Okay, so that covers the lump sum categories. What were the other categories?
So the next categories was restricted budget categories totaling $214,715. These were for more specific purposes like renovations and remodeling of the court areas.
I see.
So $5,718 for renovation and remodeling projects, $14,917 for maintaining the court areas, $24,340 for security measures, $4,000 for purchasing new equipment, and $22,454 for equipment maintenance.
So keeping the court facilities up to date and secure.
Exactly. And there's a recurring expense that pops up every year, OCIS services.
What's OCIS?
It stands for Oklahoma Court Information System. It's their digital infrastructure, basically. That cost $34,608 in 2006.
Makes sense that they'd have ongoing technology costs like that. What was the final category of spending from the court fund?
The final category was mandated categories, which total $599,199.
Mandated, what does that mean?
These were payments required by law, basically. The vast majority of that, $590,199, went to the state judicial fund.
Which I assume helps fund the court system statewide.
You got it. And the remaining $9,000 was allocated to the county law library.
All right, so for 2006, you said the court fund brought in $1,114,620 and spent $1,093,777. What does that mean for the overall balance?
So that means there was a positive difference of $20,843.
Okay, so they ended the year in the black.
Exactly. When you add in the beginning balance from the previous fiscal year, July 1st, 2005, which was $233,947, the court fund ended fiscal year 2006 with a balance of $254,790.
So a pretty healthy position. What about 2007?
2007 saw an increase in total collections up to $1,248,480.
Wow. Even more money coming in. What drove that increase?
It was mostly due to higher amounts from fines, fees, and forfeitures. Total spending also went up, reaching $1,215,872.
Where were the biggest increases in spending that year?
They saw increases in areas like guardian ad litem fees, and they also spent more on part-time court clerk employees.
So more cases and more work overall.
Sounds like it. But even with increased spending, they still collected more than they spent. They ended up with a positive difference of $32,608.
That's good. So what did their ending balance look like after 2007?
Their ending balance for 2007 was $287,398.
Okay, so the fund was growing. Let's move on to 2008. What happened then?
2008 saw even higher collections, this time reaching $1,340,408.
Wow, that's a pretty big jump.
It is. Spending also went up in 2008, though, up to $1,337,862.
Were there any specific areas where spending increased significantly?
One notable increase was the amount allocated to the state judicial fund.
Okay, so they were sending more money back to the state level. What was the difference between the total collections and deductions for 2008?
The difference was much smaller than in previous years, just $2,546. So things were getting a bit tighter.
It sounds like it. What about their ending balance?
Their ending balance for 2008 was $289,944.
So just a tiny bit higher than the year before. It seems like their margin was shrinking.
It does, and that trend sort of continued into 2009. Total collections actually dipped a bit that year, down to $1,267,360.
Oh, so less money coming in.
Right, but total deductions remained high at $1,301,252.
So they were still spending a lot. What did that mean for their balance sheet?
For the first time in these 4 years, they actually spent more than they brought in. There was a negative difference of $33,892.
They ended 2009 in the red.
Right, and their ending balance on June 30th, 2009 was $256,052. A decrease from the previous year. So a slight dip in the court fund's overall health.
Interesting to see those fluctuations from year to year. Now let's look at the court clerk revolving fund. How did that perform during the same period?
The court clerk revolving fund's a bit different. It gets its income from specific revolving fees. These fees are charged by the clerk's office, and the money is used for expenses directly related to the clerk's office operations.
Okay, so it's a separate pot of money used for specific things. Got it. What did it look like in 2006?
In 2006, the total collections for the revolving fund were $104,293, but the total amount spent was significantly higher at $175,465.
Wait, so they spent way more than they brought in?
Yeah, they did. That resulted in spending exceeding collections by a pretty substantial amount, $71,172.
Ouch. So what happened to their fund balance?
It definitely took a hit. Their beginning balance was $141,276, and they ended 2006 with only $70,104.
Okay, that's a pretty big drop. What about 2007? Did they manage to bounce back?
They did. 2007 was a much better year for the revolving fund. Collections went up to $142,651.
So more money coming in.
Right, and spending actually fell quite a bit, down to $56,420.
What caused that decrease in spending?
That's hard to say for sure without digging into more specifics, but it's definitely a positive sign. The result was a positive difference of $86,231.
So they ended the year with a surplus.
Exactly. And their ending balance for 2007 more than doubled to $156,335.
Wow, what a turnaround. What about 2008? Did they keep up the momentum?
In 2008, collections for the revolving fund continued to climb, this time reaching $164,361.
Okay, so even more money coming in. What about spending?
Spending also went up a bit in 2008, up to $125,282, but they were still in a good position. Collections exceeded spending by a solid $39,079, which meant their ending balance went up again to $195,414.
Nice. And finally, what about 2009? How did the revolving fund wrap up these 4 years?
In 2009, they collected $151,448. Spending rose again to $155,070, which meant they spent slightly more than they collected.
A familiar story for 2009, it seems.
Right. So there was a small negative difference, just $3,622, but their ending balance was still a respectable $191,792.
Okay, so despite a little dip at the end, the revolving fund finished much stronger than it started in 2006.
Yeah, it did.
Now, we've talked about the ups and downs of these funds, but there was a recurring finding in all four of these reports that we need to address. It's about segregation of duties.
Ah, yes, a classic audit finding.
Can you break down what that means and why it matters?
Sure. The basic idea that for good accountability and to protect those public funds, you want key financial responsibilities split among different people.
So not just one person doing everything.
Exactly. Ideally, no single person should have control over authorizing a transaction, having access to the cash, and also keeping the records.
I see. So it's about having checks and balances in place. Makes sense. What exactly was the auditor finding in the Pottawatomie County Court Clerk's office?
The reports pointed out several areas where there wasn't enough separation. First, they found that all employees were using the same cash drawer.
Wait. Really? Everyone?
That's what the report says. Then there's the first and second deputies. They had a whole bunch of responsibilities related to handling incoming cash. They were balancing the cash drawer, preparing deposit slips, taking the money to the county treasurer, and even reconciling bank statements.
It does sound like a lot of responsibility concentrated in just two people. Anything else?
Yeah, they could also approve write-offs of bad debt and make adjustments to accounts receivable.
So a lot of control over the money.
Right. Now, on the spending side, the reports found that the court clerk was responsible for a whole chain of steps.
Okay, like what?
Calculating and reviewing the amounts to be paid, authorizing purchases, preparing the paperwork for claims, and then giving final approval for those claims.
So they had their hands in pretty much every part of the process.
It seems so. And the first and second deputies were also involved in the payment process.
In what way?
They were reviewing payment amounts, preparing the vouchers, signing them, mailing them, and even certifying that the goods or services had been received. Oh, and the second deputy also had the power to approve purchases.
So, several people with overlapping responsibilities. What's the risk there? What did the auditors say could happen?
The state auditor and inspector was pretty clear about the potential problems. When you have one person handling so many steps, it creates opportunities for things to slip through the cracks. You might have unrecorded transactions, or the financial reports might not be accurate.
So basically, mistakes could happen more easily.
Exactly. And in a worst-case scenario, someone could potentially misuse funds without being easily detected. The lack of those independent checks really increases the risk.
So what did the auditors recommend to fix this?
Their recommendation was consistent across all 4 years. Management at the court clerk's office needed to be aware of the risks and understand that having such concentrated duties isn't a best practice.
Right. It's not about pointing fingers, but making sure the system is set up to prevent problems.
Exactly. The OSAI recommended more oversight and periodic reviews.
So more checks and balances. What specifically did they suggest?
For the cash receipts, they suggested giving each employee their own separate cash drawer, and each employee should balance their own drawer daily, with that balance being independently reviewed by someone else.
Okay, so more separation of duties there. What about the payments going out?
They recommended separating who issues the payment vouchers from who actually mails them out. And for payments from the court fund, They suggested separating who requests the goods or services from who confirms they're actually received.
Okay, so basically breaking down those tasks and spreading them out among different people makes sense to me. What did the court clerk's office say about all this?
Interestingly, their response was almost identical each year. They mentioned that they had 12 deputies, and their software system let 3 of them reverse receipts if there was an error.
Okay, so they had some internal controls.
Right. They also said that the deputies rotated monthly in handling deposits and the end-of-month bookkeeping. And each year, they mentioned they were training another deputy to help with these functions.
So it sounds like they acknowledged the issue and were taking some steps.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like it was enough for the auditors. Since this was a repeated finding for 4 years, the auditors weren't fully convinced that those measures completely addressed the risks.
That's a good point. It seems like the auditors wanted more separation of duties than the court clerk's office was implementing. Now, in addition to this recurring segregation of duties issue, the 2009 report had a specific finding related to the revolving fund, right? Can you tell us about that?
Right. In fiscal year 2009, the auditors found one instance out of 25 they tested where a claim for payment from the revolving fund was missing an invoice or any other supporting documentation.
So they found a payment without a receipt.
Pretty much. And having that documentation is really important.
Why is that?
Good accounting requires documentation for every expenditure. It ensures accountability and shows that the money's being used appropriately.
Makes sense. You need that paper trail to follow the money. So what did they recommend?
The recommendation was straightforward. Always make sure an original invoice or other appropriate supporting documentation is attached to every claim before any payment is made. No exceptions.
What was the response from the court clerk's office to this particular finding?
This time, they actually disagreed with the auditors.
Really? What did they say?
The report says the court clerk stated, and I quote, "I do not agree with this statement. I never pay a claim without an invoice attached. The district judge would not sign it without an invoice." So they were pretty adamant.
So what did the auditors say to that?
The OSAI response section of the report clarified things a bit. They explained that the document for that specific claim, claim number 137, was actually just a memo from the county clerk to the court clerk requesting a purchase order for the court clerk's revolving fund.
So not really an invoice.
Not really, no. And the OSAI went on to explain that a memo isn't considered sufficient documentation for a payroll claim, which is what claim 137 was for. So it seems there was a bit of a misunderstanding about what qualifies as adequate documentation.
So it wasn't just about having a piece of paper, it was about having the right piece of paper.
Exactly.
That's interesting. So, big picture, what are the key takeaways you want listeners to remember from these reports?
Overall, these reports on the Pottawatomie County Court Clerk show generally sound financial practices. They were doing a good job with things like collecting fees, supporting payments, and keeping their records in line with the county treasurer. However, there's that recurring issue of segregation of duties, which is a potential weakness they need to address.
And of course, that 2009 finding about the missing documentation highlights how important it is to have proper paperwork for all transactions, which really applies to any organization, right? Not just government offices.
Absolutely. It makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. So listeners, consider this. What potential risks are lurking in your own workplace or even in your personal finances if you're not following these same principles?
Food for thought.
Absolutely.
It's always a good idea to have checks and balances and proper documentation no matter what you're doing. It's about protecting yourself and your money.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap things up. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, stay informed.
And stay vigilant.